The heart is very revealing. Jesus said this in his Sermon on the Mount, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." The Bible has a lot to say about wealth, money, and the danger associated with it. So I would like to begin by asking a question today. Who's in charge of your money? Let me offer three possibilities, three negative possibilities and one good possibility. Is it greed? Is it materialism? Is it pride? Or is it God? So let's ask, first of all, is it greed? Greed comes from deep within our sinful nature. There's always that voice that we hear from greed that says, we need more, just one more. It is greed that never allows us to find contentment. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." Notice it doesn't say the love of money, as this verse is most often quoted. It says the love of money, because money is neutral. "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." And Luke 12:15, "Then he said to them, 'Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions.'" Greed is powerful, and it can completely dominate and control our lives. Isn't materialism, this desire very closely associated with grief, but materialism is this desire to want things, to want stuff. And you know this happens in America because one of the number one businesses in America is building storage. They can't build it fast enough because Americans have so much stuff. They can't fit it in their house or their garage. You see how many cars are outside? No, I didn't drive by your house. It's just that Americans are running out of space to put the stuff because we live in a very materialistic age. Our culture dictates for many of us how we should spend our money. Just look at magazines or advertisements. They're all about the materialism, the stuff that will make you happy, will make you popular, will make you a winner if you use their stuff, right down to the brand of shampoo or the kind of car you drive. 1 Timothy 6:9, "People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction." That's materialism. This is what Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German pastor who stood up to Hitler, said about materialism. "Earthly possessions dazzle our eyes and delude us into thinking that they can provide security and freedom from anxiety. Yet all the time, they are the very source of anxiety." What about pride? Is pride in control of our money? 1 Timothy 6:17, "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment." Pride is a powerful motivator, because once you have some stuff, once you have some money, once you have the power that comes with money, this arrogance begins to take over. God knows that, and he said these very important words to Israel. Listen to these words from Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 17. "You may say to yourself, 'My power and my strength and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me.'" God says you may say this. People still say this to themselves, but it's not true, he says. "But remember the Lord." Underline those words, "but remember the Lord." This is the antidote for pride, controlling your money. "But remember the Lord." Some things cannot be forgotten, and you cannot forget the Lord. Because if you do, you will believe the lie. Yeah, I did this. I got this. My ingenuity, my creativity. Verse 18, "But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your forefathers as it is today. If you ever forget," there's those words again, "if you ever forget, the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. Greed, materialism, pride, they create hypocrisy in our lives. They move us away from authenticity, from being sincere and honest and real. The leaders, the Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes that Jesus encountered and had these confrontations with were men who had wealth and power. And Jesus confronted them about their own hypocrisy. We're in a study of the book of Luke, and we're coming to the end of Jesus' ministry, where after Palm Sunday, he actually took over the temple. He cleansed the temple, and he stayed there for several days teaching. They actually tried to throw him out by asking him by what authority he was there teaching, and that didn't go too well. He said to them, well, you answer my question, I'll answer yours. Was John's baptism, was it from heaven or was it from men? We can't answer that, they said. So Jesus said, I'm not going to answer your question either. So he stayed there several days teaching, and we have looked at all of those teachings that Jesus gave in the temple in defiance of the leaders. He blasted them even there for their hypocrisy. Back in Luke 20, 47, he said to them, speaking to them, they devour widows' houses for a show, make lengthy prayers. Such men will be punished most severely. And the last thing he does before leaving the temple is a very unique little story that Luke has put in here about Jesus. It's about a little widow giving an offering. And I'm calling it Lessons from the Widow, the very poor widow. Let's look at Luke chapter 21, verses 1 through 4. Those are our verses we're going to study today. As he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. I tell you the truth, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put all she had to live on. Now, they didn't give their offering the way we do. We have ushers take the offering up. So they actually had chests. When you came into the temple, there were chests on the outside. So if we were to try to give you an analogy, it would be out there in the entryway. They had chests. Now, these didn't look like wooden chests. They were made out of brass, and they actually looked like an inverted horn. Imagine a trumpet that is setting with the standing up, much like that. So there's 13 of these large brass chests that look much like a trumpet or a horn, narrow at the top, and then they widen out at the bottom, and they actually have on there the name of the offering. One of them said new shekel, old shekel, bird offerings, wood, frankincense, gold. You could actually bring an offering of gold. Then at least six of them just said free will offering. They didn't have paper money back then, so you brought your offering. The offering was heavy. And depending on the coin, it might be made out of silver. Some coins were made out of actual gold. And they brought the money, and you drop it in this brass chest. It makes a lot of money. Some of these people who came to the temple, the money was so heavy, had to have somebody carry it. And when we do the BGMC, you know, we get the money for the kids, and you get those little containers, it's amazing how heavy they are, especially two or three of them. The money can be very heavy. So here you have some of these guys coming to the offering. They got two or three servants behind them carrying their offering. And then you're dumping it into these brass chests, plunk, all this money. And Jesus is standing over observing with his disciples. He's observing. When you watch people, it's interesting. You're at the mall or you're somewhere where there's a lot of people and you're just looking at all the people. Isn't it observing how unique people are? How we are. And when I'm sure people watch me, they say, what a weird guy that is. And they look at you. Well, Jesus was watching. He can do that as they put the offerings in. Notice verse 1, as he looked up, Jesus saw. So he's actually looking at all the people, the rich, putting their offerings in. Let me just hammer the point here that this might be a terrorizing thought to people who really don't know God, that God is watching all the time. But for those who really love God, that's not a terrorizing thought at all. God sees everything. He's omniscient. He's everywhere. Look at Psalm 139. David is the author of the psalm, one of the most beautiful psalms. You can't sleep at night. Read Psalm 139. You're filled with anxiety. Read Psalm 139. Here's a couple verses. O Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. That's a God who sees. You remember Hannah from the Old Testament? She wanted to have a baby, had been unable to do that, and had prayed so hard. And in one of her prayers, she believes God sees everything. She understood this principle that we call omnipresence. God is everywhere. 1 Samuel chapter 2, do not keep talking so proudly or let your mouth speak such arrogance, for the Lord is a God who knows, and by him deeds are weighed. So Jesus is watching as the rich come by and they put their money. Some of these people are very wealthy, and when they put the offerings in, it was perhaps to some of the others, well, can you top that? Or others are like, wow, man, what an offering. And certainly attitudes and arrogance, especially if those motives of pride or greed or arrogance are running your life. Jesus not only saw the actions, but he actually saw the hearts of all of those people coming by. And then it says he saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. Now, these are actually worth less than our penny, which has actually gotten to the point that most people won't even reach down and pick up a penny because it's becoming more and more worthless. This little coin was actually called a lepta, which means thin peeling. It was very, very thin. Here's what a commentator says. Her offering was two coins so small they were called lepta, literally meaning peeled. The idea being a tiny thin coin, the miniature lepton was worth only 1/400th of a shekel, or about 1/8th of a cent. It would take eight of them even to equal one of our pennies. But that's all she had. And she dropped these two thin coins, which probably didn't make any noise at all compared to all of these other offerings. And Jesus commented on the offering that this widow had made. This woman, for her, these two thin little coins that were really so worthless to the rich who were there, were very meaningful to Jesus. And Jesus said that it was all she had. She didn't have any more reserves. And therefore, he said that it was a huge offering. She actually was living out her faith. As Deuteronomy says in 6:4, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. In effect, she was giving all she had when she dropped those two coins. That's what Jesus actually says. Verse 4, all these people gave their gifts out of their wealth. They still had lots of wealth left. But, notice the contrast, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. She gave everything. Now, the conclusions that Jesus made are very powerful for us. And I want to make some observations about our hearts and the connection to money, drawn from this story. Number one, motive matters to God. Our motives matter. Motives can be hidden from other people, and we can discern them by attitudes and by actions, and we can perceive. In investigations, we try to determine the motive for crimes. But sometimes motives are actually very difficult to determine in the courts of law. They have to present what they think is the motive or what the evidence points to, but there's no exact science for determining a person's motive because it's hidden from us. But it's not hidden from God. Motives matter to God. Listen to a couple of verses. Acts 15:8. God who knows the heart. What's that mean? It means he knows our motives for what we do. Showed that he accepted them by giving the Holy Spirit to them just as he did to us. That happens to be Peter speaking to the household of Cornelius, people to whom most of the Jews were extremely prejudiced. And Peter says, God who knows their hearts. 1 Corinthians 13:3, out of the love chapter, Paul writes, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Paul says, if you gave the ultimate sacrifice of even giving your body as a martyr, but you don't have love, you just wasted your body. Motive matters to God. Secondly, when we give an offering, it should cost us something. It shouldn't be just an offering that we give because, yeah, it's a nice thing. That's what everybody does. It should cost us something. C.S. Lewis, writing about giving, said, I do not believe one can settle how much we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure on comforts, luxuries, amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we are probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say that they are too small. There ought to be things we should like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditure excludes them. David is an example of someone who had a generous heart, who liked to give. And there was an example once when a famine that God had allowed and permitted, which had taken the life of 70,000 Israelites. It was a troubled time, and David was seeking God. And God told him to offer a sacrifice. So he came to the spot of where he should make this sacrifice. And he declared, one of the fellow Israelites, a very loyal subject of David, his name was Araunah, he came to the king and he says, O king, I hear that you want to offer a sacrifice. David was not close to his palace or his land or his goods. And he says, look, here is a threshing floor, this place where they would thresh the grain. There was wood. He says, there's everything. Here are the animals. I give everything to you. David's reply becomes a very important example for all of us when it comes to giving to God. 2 Samuel 24, verse 24, but the king replied to Araunah, no, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. And that's the spot where the temple was later built. But he wouldn't offer a sacrifice to the Lord that didn't cost him something. I don't think we know how to give to God until we have experienced brokenness in our own life. Until we've come to a place of total dependence on God, if we think that we can make it, if money means to us a certain kind of security, then we will never know what David is talking about here, giving till it actually hurts. This woman who gave these two coins gave out of a brokenness. How would she make it if she gave the last two coins she had? Her love for God and her dependence on God to take care of her. If you make enough money or if you accumulate enough wealth, you can lose that dependence on God. And you will be the lesser for it. You will be in a very bad place. Last week in my message, I talked about the sovereignty of God, which is one of the most powerful themes of the Bible. Runs all the way through the Old Testament, through the New. And I thought that would be a wonderful topic for Patriotic Sunday, because God is sovereign, just like he's omniscient. It's all about God. I said a verse in that service last Sunday that is controversial to many, because God can say good things or bad things to us. What he wants, whether it is good things, prosperity, or whether it is bad things, scarcity, in both situations, that we depend on him and that we trust him. If while we have good things, we become haughty and we forget where those things come from, then God will regret that he has allowed prosperity to come our way. If we begin to think, as he says in Deuteronomy, wow, look what I've done, look what I've accumulated, and we forget that he gave us the ability with our mind or our hands to accumulate. And then when he sends us bad, if we blame him and say, oh God, have you forgotten me or are you punishing me? We miss the whole point. But rather, like Job, we say, should we not accept good or bad from him? He's God, he's sovereign. George Matheson, who lived hundreds and hundreds of years ago, he was a pastor, a Puritan pastor in Scotland or England, I can't remember right now, but he ministered for over 40 years to the same church, and he was blind. Listen to this paragraph about brokenness. My soul, reject not the place of thy prostration. It has ever been the robing room of royalty. Ask the great ones of the past what has been the spot of their prosperity. They will say it was the cold ground on which I once was lying. Ask Abraham, and he will point you to the sacrifice on Moriah. Ask Joseph, and he will direct you to his dungeon in Egypt. Ask Moses, and he will date his fortune from the danger in the Nile. Ask Ruth, and she will bid you build her monument in the field of her toil. Ask David, and he will tell you that his songs came in the night. Ask Job, and he will remind you that God answered him out of the whirlwind of loss. Ask Paul, and he will contribute his inspiration to the light that struck him blind. Ask one more, the Son of Man, and he will answer, from the cold ground on which I was lying, Gethsemane ground, I receive my scepter there. Broken people give what costs them something, because God is worth more than just the leftovers. Another principle when it comes to money is to understand with God, less is more. It doesn't matter the amount. It matters the heart. You see, nobody has an advantage when it comes to giving. Rich people don't have an advantage over poor people, educated over uneducated. We're all the same because it's from the heart. We give from the heart. And less is more with God. I mean, he's the one who can take a little boy's lunch and feed 5,000 men and all the rest of the people. You remember those two stories out of the book of 1 and 2 Kings? First of all, there is this little widow, and Elijah comes, and he says, can you make me some food? Make me some bread. And she says, I just have a handful of flour left. He said, just go ahead. I mean, use what I have. Yeah, use it. She goes in there and makes him some bread, takes the rest of it, and then the whole time he stays there, even though there's a famine everywhere, every time she goes, there's more flour. And she takes all of it out, and the next time she goes, there's more. And she can't figure it out. Because less is more with God. Or then there's the one with Elisha. Remember this story? This widow comes to Elisha, and she says, they're going to come and take my boys. That's how they paid debts back then. They took your kids. And she says, I don't know what to do. And he says, well, take out all, do you have a lot of vessels, you know, pots and pans? Well, I don't have very many. Well, go borrow some. Borrow from every neighbor in the neighborhood. Fill up the whole house. So she does. And then Elijah prayed, and they all, she took this little bit of oil that she had, and he said, just start pouring. And she started pouring, and it filled up and filled up, and she filled them, all of them. And when she filled the last one, the last drop came out. If she had had another pan, it would have kept pouring. Because that's what God does. It doesn't matter what we give. It's how we give it from our heart. We are proof of that in this church. So 19 years ago, we all, those of you who were here 19 years ago, we were in this auditorium facing this tremendous choice of trying to save this church, the property, the building, the congregation. And we had to decide whether or not we would accept a loan of $1.5 million, which would come with a payment of over $12,000 a month. When we finally decided we would go this route, we accepted it. We weren't in a position to make the payment for the first year. So by the time we started paying, which that made the loan 21 years, we were almost $1.6 million in debt. Now, 19 years later, we only owe $255,000, and the debt will be paid off in less than 2 years. And the size of this congregation to take that debt and pay that debt, not only have we paid it, but we've paid additional debt every month. And beyond that, the Lord has enabled us to give the tens of thousands of dollars to missions without fail, because less is more to God. One very important thing about when it comes to money, not just money, we're talking about giving. The subject of giving is so much bigger than money, because when we talk about giving, we're talking about giving of ourselves, giving of our labor, giving of our time. That's the most important. That involves our wealth. That involves money. But there's going to be a time when everything is going to be revealed. I do not think that the widow ever knew that Jesus made this commentary about her to the disciples, because it's just not like Jesus. Hey, little widow, come over here. He didn't do that. That's not like. So she probably never even knew that he commended her to the disciples, or that thousands and millions of people have been reading about her in the scripture, because she's written in there. But someday she'll find out about it. Listen to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. You see, that day is capitalized. That is the judgment of Christ. No unbelievers will be here. This isn't a judgment of salvation. This is a judgment of revealing, where God reveals everything. They'll find out about those two little thin coins and what it meant to God. Because giving is really a part of worship. When Paul was taking an offering back to the Jerusalem church, the church where everything had actually begun, and they were suffering a famine, so the churches that he and Barnabas and Silas had started in different parts of the world, he asked them to give an offering that he would take back to help Jerusalem. And this is written about the Macedonian churches. This would be the churches. Philippi is a Macedonian. The letter to the Philippians is a Macedonian church. 2 Corinthians 8, 1 and 5. And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. So these are very poor people. They had a severe trial. They were going through tough times. They had very little. But they did have overflowing joy in the midst of their extreme poverty. And it says, for I testify that they gave as much as they were able, even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. They urged, They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. Paul, don't go without our offering. We want to give. Some people would have said, well, those Macedonian churches, they barely have enough to even make it themselves. When we started the Argentine Missions Department, we started in churches where we were working that were so poor that it seemed ridiculous. But I believed that we should start with them to give, because it's not based on how much money or how affluent. It's from the heart that we give. We first give ourselves, and then we give of whatever we have. In one of the places we served, the province of Chaco, there's a church there that a group from People's Church came down to help us. And there was a little lady in that church. Her name was Maria. We all called her Abuela Maria. And she was at every service. She would be there early. When she became a part of that church, she just was the, everyone knew her. She was into everything. When that team was there, she was there every day working with the team. She got her boots on. She was out there, you know, bringing them water, bread, whatever they need. It was amazing to see her. Well, one Sunday night, my family and I went to this church because we lived in another province, and went to this church and I preached. And after the service, she came up to me and she said, Pastor Boyd, I have a gift I want to give you. And she put some coins in my hand, and then she grabbed my hand and she closed it. And she said, don't look at it. Just put it in your pocket and mix it with your other money. So I put it in there. And she said, I'll be going on a trip next week. I don't need that. When we got in the car, she had done that to every member of the family. And then the next day, I found out that she'd done that to the pastor and another associate. But just a couple days later, they found her in her rocking chair. She'd gone to be with the Lord. Sitting in a rocking chair, her open Bible on her lap, there was her offering for her tithes for the next Sunday, her building offering, her missions offering, all in her Bible, all ready to go as she went to be with the Lord. Now, she seemed to have a sense that she was going. Before it happened, she seemed to know she was going, because she had definitely told us all she was going on a trip. I don't know if she knew specifically she was going to the Lord, but she definitely went on a trip to where we're all wanting to be. But I will tell you, the greatest sense of life comes from people who have surrendered everything to God, including their money. If you are still hanging on to your money and think that it is yours, then you're not in control of your money. Pride is, greed is, arrogance is, materialism is, but you're not in control of your money. Only when you've turned it over to God and given it completely to Him will you feel the sense of calm and peace. Otherwise, you will be living this life that there's never enough. You'll always be wanting more. You will always be struggling. There is this gift of contentment that comes when you turn it over to God, and you can actually be happy with what's there. It's amazing to think that Jesus would say that that little widow with those two little thin coins put in more than all the rest. God knows.